As a German citizen, of course, we will speak on some point about German attractions in this podcast. And of course, there are some really good examples when we talk about storytelling, when we talk about technology, or even about smaller things that are not recognized pretty much or not coming into the focus of, I don't know, media or something, about operations, HR, and such topics. So we will speak, of course, about Europa Park, Fantasia Land, about Karl's Strawberry Farm, which sounds weird when I say it out loud, but on some point, we will talk about this more specifically. But today, we will have a look at somebody who is working for those parks in the background, especially in that period of time when those parks are planning new projects. And my guest is nobody else than Frédéric Pastuzac. He is a French architect who is especially known through his biggest projects like Arthur and the Minimoys, which is the suspended power coaster indoor dark ride attraction at Europa Park, or even the Vodan Timber wooden coaster at Europa Park as well. And his newest installation and project was Gold Rush, the Intamin multi-dimension roller coaster at Drayton Manor in the UK. And who am I? My name is Stefan Burian, and I can say welcome to How to Freizeitpark Abroad, the business podcast for leisure makers. I am a freelancing operations consultant with a main focus on operations, HR, and guest experience, and I support leisure attractions of any kind and size. So if you're interested in my services, just visit my website www.stefanburian.com. And if you're wondering how is this spelled, just have a look into the show notes. There you can find any further information about myself and, of course, about this podcast. And this interview was recorded during the IAPA Expo Europe in Amsterdam, which was taking place in September, so a couple of weeks ago. And I have to say, this trade show was really exciting this year because it was so huge. There were so many people, and so many visitors really recognized me, which was crazy because this podcast is maybe new for you there outside, but my German channel is about 5 years old now. So there is some followership out there, which makes me really grateful for this project. But it also really makes me really be grateful for what I'm doing here, because I have the honor and the chance to speak with so many creative and amazing people out there. And Frédéric is one of those enjoyable human beings out there who has a huge passion for this industry. And I hope you really enjoy this interview so much as I did when we recorded it at some booth. I don't know where we were at that point on the trade show. But so just bear in mind, there might be some background noise, of course, from the visitors and from the convention hall as well. And so I would say, fasten your seatbelts, and here we go. So most of the time we talk with people from the industry where we know the face, like the Mack family, or I don't know, to be honest, any other names right now, Amanda Thompson from Blackpool. But today we have somebody as a guest who is usually behind the scenes, usually working on a desk, on a drawing board, and is doing stuff we see all day. But I don't know if he's recognized or not, but most of the fans should know him. Today, my guest is Frédéric Pastuzac. Hello, Frédéric.
Yeah, hello, Stefan. Many thanks for inviting me to your podcast.
Yeah, thanks.
Really, I'm following it since day one. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great to hear.
And always great insights and great stories to hear. And
awesome. And I'm really curious about your stories, because you are responsible for some really cool projects we are talking about today. But before we start, please introduce yourself what is your motivation for this industry? Why are you working for this industry? And how did you come to the amusement industry?
So I was really deeply in love as a child with fun fairs. So there was the yearly fun fair in my town and in France, and that I was attending. And in 1989, we moved to change region because my dad changed the job. And we arrived in Alsace. And everyone was telling us, oh, what's to do here, what's to visit? And everyone pointed to Europa Park. And so that's the first time I got to see what a theme park is.
Yeah.
I love the rides, but I discovered the theming around it. I discovered the setting of an amusement park. And I found it, wow, this is amazing. That's what I want to do later. And I never moved away from that dream since I was 9 years old. When I was a teenager, I spent my free time to basically take the plan of Europa Park. It was on the back side of the brochure of Europa Park. I was making photocopies of it, blowing it bigger, and to draw the master plan of the pieces between the themed zone of the current park to see, okay, we could put that, a village and that. And I ended up to go to Europa Park to have my drawing with me. And when Roland Mack was riding with his electric cars, you know, I was, hey, Mr. Mack, look what I drew. An ID, we can do a village here for this and a village that, and here put a carousel and that. Yeah, and it was really great received from Mr. Mack because he encouraged me. He was very positive. He told me to keep going and moving forward. Later on, I worked at Europa Park during the summer jobs, which is the best school ever. Because now when I see in some international project that they need a consultant for operation, a consultant for F&B, a consultant for that. If you summer jobbed as an operator in the park, if one day you did also in the F&B to do pizza or to sell coffee or whatever, basically, hey, I can sell that knowledge now.
Yeah. So you lose everything.
And I don't need the consultant to come, you know, because I know how to design a ride with a queue line, where to put the operator booth, how to manage the exit shop, where to put the, how to manage a design a kitchen or point of sale for F&B. So it's quite a good learning curve. So Europa Park taught me a lot as a student. Later on, I studied architecture. Because it's very generic and very, it's creative without to be too much creative, a bit engineering, a bit of design. So it gives you the comprehension of a whole project from A to Z. I got fortunate to be able to do my internship at the Europa Park Architecture Office at that time. Cool. So 2003.
Yeah.
And I was assigned to the construction of Colosseo. So I was working with the...
So let me get this straight. You have been there as an intern... And you were working on the project of the Hotel Colosseo?
On the construction. So I didn't design it.
All right.
But I was on the construction. So basically I was taking the... I was helping the site manager.
Ah, okay.
From Europa Park.
Got it.
Especially there was the company AAB, which do rock work from France.
Atelier du Bouton.
Genau. And no one in the architecture office of Europa Park was speaking French. And most of their workers were only speaking French.
And that's where you come in.
And then that's where I come. So basically, they attributed me the part. Okay, you manage AAB. You talk to them. You do everything. So basically, from one day to the other, I was managing their schedule, managing their payment, managing their...
Crazy.
But also doing the art direction.
Yeah.
Giving my opinion. You know, at the beginning, the guy comes, you know, the architect of the hotel, and then he tells, yeah, change that. But he quickly see that I can do it also. So it was easy. And after the hotel opened, it's funny because the hotel opened like 2 days before, after I graduated from the architecture school. And also with an interesting project because I did as a graduation thesis, the master plan of the Europa Park expansion that we know today as Rulantica. Mm-hmm. So I really started because in that time I was Mr. Kreff from Buren, which is the general manager of Rulantica, was in charge of this expansion talk with the politics because they were classifying the land to be buildable and to get that special kind of permit for the expansion. So it's a lot of negotiation politics in Europe for that kind of project. And it took a long time. And it's funny, and to have done the first master plan for it. And then later on, when I was working in Europa Park, like 15 years later, I was redoing the master plan for it and completely different because what did I do? You know, as a young, you don't have the same experience, you know? And with experience, you can really make a project and mature and get a real better outcome.
Yeah.
It was great. So, yeah. So I graduated from architecture school. I didn't join Europa Park directly, but I got the opportunity to go AAB. So Atelier Artistique du Béton.
Of course, they knew you already.
They knew me. Yeah. They got a great project in Dubai at that time, which was a themed shopping mall. Mm-hmm. It's called the Ibn Battuta Shopping Mall. And so it was a 6-month contract. And for doing the art direction on this, which I really, really like, you know, from one day to the other, you're in another country and on a big construction site, something, dimensions you never saw before in Europe. So it was completely nuts. And then they kept me to work in France at their headquarters. And there I was doing some sales support design. So basically it means... like there is a park or a zoo that calls them because they would like some rock work and they have no idea. And then you come in and you say, hey, you're building a monkey exhibit where you do your rock work. Why don't you build a monkey coffee next to it and a playground where the kids can play like monkeys, you know, and also and that. And maybe you can put a little carousel or something, you know, and you make that little piece of master plan themed zone around the exhibit, make them dream.
Yeah.
And then you don't sell 200 square meter of rock work, but you sell 1,000 square meter of rock work, but they never build your project. But it was, yeah, basically my job, my salary was paid by the amount of extra rock work they were selling to them. You make people dream. And then I got the chance of getting an internship at PGAV in America.
Well, I heard that, yeah.
So PGAV is the company that is behind Busch Gardens and SeaWorld in USA. They're based in St. Louis, Missouri, and in Europe, they designed the original PortAventura, because it was at that time a project from Busch, Anheuser Busch, and most recently, they did the Rolantica for Europa Park.
Ah, okay. So the circle services at that point.
Yeah, they have a long history with Macrites together because, as you know, the first water coaster was Journey to Atlantis in SeaWorld Orlando. Yeah. And that's a product that was jointly developed by PGAV and Macrites for SeaWorld Orlando. So it's always good to see the people. And here, for example, I met Jeff Havlik yesterday, which is one of the head creative from PGAV and is still... We are in touch after so many years, and I learned so much from him. It was really 1.5 good year in America, where I got in touch with really professional master planning, which was really funny because I was doing that at AAB, but I had no clue how to do my job.
Yeah.
So I was basically inventing the methodology how to do projects. And then I go to America to learn how professional do it, and it was not that much different, you know, the way the thought process, or you do that. And 2009, my internship comes to an end. I said internship because in order to get a visa to work in the USA, it was easier to make it an internship.
Yeah.
And then Michael Mack calls me and say, you know what? I just had a meeting with Luc Besson and I'm buying an IP license to do a ride and I want you to do that ride.
Wow.
And that was the beginning of Arthur the Ride. So, yeah.
And that's where I think most people will know you from. And I still remember those making of videos where you were walking around the construction site of Arthur and explaining happening.
That was so much fun. That was really so much fun.
And what a crazy construction site it was. It was massive. It was deep. It was huge. It was cramped. It was everything. It was like, I believe, one of the craziest projects since then that Europa Park has done, right?
It was... It's a massive chance, you know, Michael Mack to trust me, being 29-year-old at that time, to do everything from A to Z.
Yeah.
I will never be thankful enough to him for that. it's really, I've learned a lot on this project. They trusted me a lot, you know. I came, okay, I saw that scene in the movie where Arthur is flying on the back of a mosquito circling around the village. I said, this is what I want my guests to experience. And so I needed to get a ride system for that. So I say, okay, but if the people are sitting, they don't see well underneath on the track. So we need to do a suspended track, an inverted track. And if we do an inverted track, let's hang it to the roof. So we limit the amount of columns, which was a huge challenge and created a lot of people. Fred, you don't have any clue about engineering. This is not possible.
And boom, there we are.
You're just an architect. But we found the right people to convince the Mac family that it's doable and the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And it worked. The secret is Goomba Lager.
Goomba Lager?
Goomba Lager. Yeah. This is some gum, squares of gum that you put between a pile and the bridge.
Yeah.
It's to absorb vibration.
Okay.
And this is what separates and absorbs the vibration of the coaster to not be transmitted to the building structure.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And so it costs a lot of money, but it's the same price as a column. So basically, it's the same at the end. And it makes much more aesthetic value to the project. So I wanted the guests to experience the fly over the Minimoys village. So having an inverted system, then it's a dark ride. You need to be able to go slow. I wanted the product to be exciting, so I wanted the acceleration to go fast, so we mixed this coaster component to it. And then, because it's a dark ride and you have scenery, you need the people to see, to orient the scene, so that's why we put a spinning to it. There was some iteration during the project phase with Mac Rides where we wanted to go an hybrid powered and gravity. The gravity was interesting, but it required like a 25-meter block break at the end with a catwalk outside over the river, evacuation staircase platform, you name it. So we quickly abandoned that because we didn't want it to destroy the integrity of the nature where we were putting the project. And then there was the whole scenery and the tight footprint of the building, because it's between the employee housing, it's between the river.
Yeah.
There is also all this consideration of building permit, the limited height, the noise barrier, because it's also towards the village of Rust. And
it's literally quite at the edge of the park.
Yeah.
So behind it, there's immediately the village and
absolutely, the people. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But it works quite well because if the ride doesn't go above the roof heights, then the noise doesn't go in the village. The noise is stopped directly by the wall of the project. It was quite a wild ride, this this adventure, you know. Meeting Luc Besson was like not the hero of my childhood, but the first adult movie that I watched after watching all these Disney cartoons when you were really little kids was the Big Blue. So Im Rausch der Tiefe, Le Grand Bleu in French.
Never heard of that.
Yeah, that was his breakthrough movie in France. Yeah. And
most important question on a Luc Besson movie, is there a car chase in it? And was the car chase in Paris? Because I believe that almost every movie have at least one car chase.
The new movies. But in the 80s, really the Big Blue, it's all about, it takes place in Greece and in Italy. And it's about diving, apnea diving.
Okay. Oh, that sounds interesting.
And one of the diver has also some dreams of dolphins, and there's a love story behind.
So more like a dramatic movie. It's not a beautiful. Like
the music is very iconic.
Yeah.
So Luc Besson works a lot with Eric Serra as a componist, which created that very iconic music of The Big Blue. Mm-hmm. Every French person knows it. And Eric Serra also did the music of the Minimoys. And I must say that the music of the Minimoys is really high caliber and great. And that was also one of my favorite parts to work on the project that we, I did a concept with the music, with the scene. We had at some point a simulation from Mack Rides, and we put our SketchUp 3D model around the ride and try to make it real time. And there are three movies from Arthur and the Minimoys. So there are three soundtracks, basically. And I've listened to every of this music hundreds of time and selected, okay, due to the dramatic appeal of one of a scene, okay, this 10 seconds from that track on that CD would fit this, or but we could switch with that one because that fits also. And I've cutted the music to go on our simulation video. And one day I got that appointment to go meet Eric Serra, the companist. And I was, okay, Mr. Serra, first of all, I did something, but I'm sorry that I cut, you know, I just, yeah. But I respect I you. I respect you. And you're going to do the final music, you know, then you can change everything. It's just to get an idea, you know?
Yeah.
And he said to it, say, yeah, that's fine. So yeah, great. I just do the transition pieces in between. So it's not cut, cut, cut like you did, but yeah, it was great. And I think my favorite part of the project was, and thank you, Michael Mack, again, I was allowed to go to the Teldex studio in Berlin for the recording with the real orchestra.
Oh, wow.
And that was the most magical moment of the project, yeah, probably. And Eric Serra took me, he gave me a chair in the middle of the orchestra.
Oh,
and I sat there, really, with violin around me and trumpets and everything. And Eric was on a podest and was directing the orchestra while playing. And when you really sit in the middle of the orchestra and you feel the air vibrating from all this music instrument, there was like maybe 50, 60 music players for that. That was, wow. That's emotional.
That's giving me goosebumps just by listening.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was great. And a wonderful collaboration with Mack Rides, you know, developing the project, the very passionate team of engineers they have, and really finding solutions to the problems or the challenges, you know, how can we do that? How can we achieve, you know? And it was really amazing.
So the mythology was more like, we have an idea, but we see the challenges, and to meet those challenges, we need to innovate. So that's why you came up with a new ride system. That's why you came up with also the whole operations around it with the
conveyor belt.
The conveyor belt.
Yeah, there was a study did. Mack Rides did a study of a different type of station. Do we go with a stop and go station? Do we go with a long stop and go station with a where we load two trains at the same time, and then we need a weight position, and then, you know, this like Poseidon. The water coaster has. And then the most efficient was the conveyor belt because it guarantees the capacity and the dispatch time. It gives enough time. And it's the shortest one because you don't have to have like three or four positions of train. Each train is 12 meter long, you know. We didn't have the space to have like a 48 meter long straight line for that. So...
yeah, it's
interesting.
I'm always excited to see the station, because when you just stand above the station and you watch how the operations is going, that's so smooth, and it's so amazing to see that's also working, because sometimes you have ideas in your mind, you put it into reality, especially when it comes to operations, which is, you know, my part, when we have projects coming to life and they are so amazing, visuals, designs, buildings, and then you are there like, okay, but where's my stuff standing? What do my operators do? How do we load and unload them? Is there anything where they can put their baggage and stuff?
All the art of Miro Gronow, that I really loved working with him on that project. We really like complement each other so well on that.
Yeah.
And we find like Miro invented the choreography of crossing the arms, which is now in every park. We had Mack Rides came with the RFID technology, so every employee on the station has a glove with an RFID chip that they had to tap on the back of the train at a special place to confirm all the lap bars are closed and ready to go. We even had with Miro, and this is like exclusive content just for you, Stefan. We came back, you know, the problem of the bags and loose items on these kind of rides. And we came with a solution before the current lockers to have what we call the tachomatic. So we basically took like a conveyor belt with boxes where you drop your stuff before boarding the train, and this box is going to travel hanging in the air on its own little track before coming down exactly on time after you finish your ride on the unloading side. And funny enough, this we really loved the concept. It was such a like a running joke.
It's such an over-engineered idea.
It was totally plausible, because if you take the logistic halls of Amazons and this kind of companies,
yeah, it's basically the
they
same.
Have this
yeah.
kind of thing. It's very reliable technology. It's totally doable. And this year we saw it as a dive coaster from B&M somewhere in America or Canada. They have that in the station.
Really?
Yes. I'll show you after. Maybe you can share it in the show notes. But it was totally nuts. Miro sent me the picture like a couple of months ago that someone did it. You know?
it's over-engineered and expensive idea. When I look like, I think it's Park Asterix on Teutates. They have like shopping carts. Mm. Stuff like, so they come just next to the coaster coaster train. People just dump their stuff and then they just move it along and come back with the stuff when you arrive.
The problem is following the challenge we had on the Minimoys. It's a suspended coaster.
Yeah.
So, and we wanted to avoid to have a big net across the whole Minimoys village, because the whole point of that was really to have this free space with the coaster gliding above you, and. So you really need, everyone needs to empty their pocket. So everyone has something, a phone at least. And the earlier you empty your pockets in the queue line before boarding the train, the more capacity of lockers and boxes you need. And that was the big challenge. And we came, Miro found this great company that has this locker system that works with a barcode. And you have this unique barcode. In the past, the Europa Park tickets, they had a unique barcode. So you could use your ticket to scan, but you could also use a box of cigarettes barcode. The problem, if someone else uses the same, it would open the same locker,
okay,
you know.
Funny story.
Yeah. I know the system was upgraded recently. We would need to ask that to Lukas Metzger, but maybe it works with QR code now or whatever. But the operators now, they give you a paper with a code if you need it, if you don't have anything.
Funny talking about those innovations. When we talk about dispatching stuff, we now look at Voltron, which is also using a conveyor belt. So there might be something to it, I believe.
No, it's Voltron. I really love the way they keep the high capacity coaster.
Yeah,
you know, the Europa Park is the only park in the world that achieve 99.9% of the theoretical capacity.
Just it's crazy. And I know I've praised Europa Park enough in my German version of this podcast, but I can't really praise it enough, because when you look at the operations they have on the roller coasters, it is insane how fast they dispatch their
I'm
rides.
I'm going to say something awful. I live in UAE.
Yeah.
And I suffer every time I visit a theme park. Being used to Europa Park capacity and dispatch and operations, I just...
I can feel you. I saw that in my time in Malaysia. I know they are very into it and they love working there, but please move just a slight centimeter per hour faster. But, you know, different cultures, different... operations.
Absolutely.
It's I have been to Spanish theme parks before, but when we talk about PortAventura, I always hear that they have awful operations as well. So I don't know, maybe more conveyor belts for roller coasters in the future.
Now, but, you know, the conveyor belts may not be the solution, because you always have an e-stop.
Yeah,
you need really the operator to be efficient.
It is dependent on the stuff you have. And
you know, when you go historically, you take the lock flume, the Wildwasserbahn.
Yeah.
It was already a conveyor belt and a non-stop station. So it goes back to the 70s.
Yeah.
It's nothing new.
Yeah, exactly. It's just took those idea and put it into the 21st century.
Absolutely.
You have been also be responsible for Volo da Vinci and for another roller coaster for Wodan.
Yes, so the Volo da Vinci, that's a small ride, but I really love it because there was this idea, there was always this exhibition hall of the Mack family and the Mack company, 200 years of Mack at that time, with this awesome models collection they had still from France Mack. And,
yeah.
And it was a beautiful place. And but we needed a new ride, and we had like, there's always in Europa Park, there's a new ride every year, but you cannot build a Voltron or a Blue Fire every year. So you need years where you have smaller things. And this one was this year, 2011. I think we did the first part of the Fairy Tale Forest that year, which was already to welcome Arthur a couple of years after. So that was part of the remodeling for that. We had 2011 also the Piccolo Mondo, which was the rehab of
Ciao Bambini.
Yeah. Which I was in charge also of it. And then we had the idea to put that pedal car monorail. But there was we wanted to be different than the other ones because there's a lot of pedal car monorail in a lot of parks. And I'm very turned into aesthetics, and I hate this catwalk along the track.
Yeah.
So let's make the product different. And we checked with the manufacturers. There was ETF and some Italian manufacturer at that time to pitch them, hey, can we do it hanging, you know?
And another suspended attraction by you. I see a theme.
And can we... can we remove the catwalk?
Yeah.
And then it goes, you know, it's possible, you know, you need to involve the TUV during the development of the ride because you need to discuss what are the solutions.
Yeah.
What is, but luckily enough, if you can prove that you have some boom lifts available to evacuate the passengers safely within like 5 minutes away, then it's fine, you know.
Yeah.
At the end, it's the responsibility of the park to communicate and be nice to these guests that are trapped on the attraction, for them to understand that, okay, it's a technical default and yeah. But Europa Park operations, Europa Park reliability, also ETF track record of reliability on their product and the engineering they had, you know, made that this product work from day one really nicely. I'm really saddened nowadays because there was a thunderstorm at Europa Park that and some storm that they had to cut a big branch of the big tree that was above the Elfenfort.
Yeah.
And now you have a big straight line with Volo da Vinci, which in the past was like a tunnel in the tree.
Yeah.
We didn't cut any single branch. We really worked to put the track height to work with the building and to work with that tree. That was a miracle, and to have enough clearance envelope naturally in the tree for the vehicle to pass through, it was just beautiful. And sadly, it's been a couple of seasons now that they had to cut that branch and that you don't have that effect, but it still will be.
Volo da Vinci is one interesting project which I think it's also very incredible to see in the Europa Park, that every inch and square meter is utilized in this park. When I remember back when they announced the endless interactive dark ride Abenteuer Atlantis in Greece, everybody was like, where in Greece, where the hell do they have space? Well, there might be some spare rooms underneath the city.
That was already planned for a dark ride.
Yeah. So that was already planned. Yeah, yeah. I see.
The Greece project was already planned with the dark.
So that was everything was planned in hindsight.
Yeah.
That's great, because when I think about
even the Snorri Turin.
Yes, I saw that. But yeah,
we know that Snorri Turin is now in the rebuild after the fire that happened in 2018, I think. But the original. There was already the space under the original Scandinavia was already for a dark ride, but it was used as a storage room for some heavy materials there. So
yeah, amazing. And then Wodan, the first wooden roller coaster for Europa Park, which is also at the edge of the park. So we have like every square meter utilized with Volo da Vinci. We have Artur at the side of the park and at the other side of the park. And I believe it was also expansion of the park, right?
Yeah, but this is part of an exercise that I did with Miro Gronau, actually.
Yeah.
That we try to master plan the park or to strategize the location of the big attraction to kind of break that jam that occurs between France and Greece.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the French village, you have Eurosat, you have Silver Star, then you have the Bob Band, you have the Matterhorn Blitz, you have the water coaster, Pegasus,
yeah, okay,
then mostly up to Euromir. Now you have Voltron, you know, it's like all the major rides were concentrated in that location. And Europa Park started 2005 by putting Atlantica Super Splash in Portugal, which is on the other side of the park. And then the Blue Fire there. And then so Arthur to put it in the Fairy Tale Forest to rebalance the flow of the guests in the park. In Disneyland Paris and probably in every Disney park, they have a department actually that is called Guestology. I met one time with some people working in the Guestology department. These are people that just do statistics of flows.
Crazy.
They can tell you, okay, like 70% of the guests that rode Pirates of the Caribbean go to Peter Pan after. This kind of statistics they do.
Yeah.
So they know the traffic flow, and unfortunately Disney parks don't grow every year like Europa Park or a lot of other parks do. But it's nice to see. And we really wanted to optimize the traffic flow in Europa Park because there's so much beautiful areas and beautiful zones that are underutilized by the guests. And dynamizing, do we say that? Well, we understand. the Fairy Tale Forest with Arthur, with brand new fairy tales. That was one of the goals. And even the location of the Voletarium was still from our work that we did with Miro. We were looking where to put the Flying Theater. And the entrance, we say, hey, people come to the park. They just go through the German street and then they come back in the evening. Let's give them a reason to come back during the day.
Yeah.
And that's why Voletarium is where it is now, at the main entrance of the park.
Yeah, that sounds like a very strategic decision. And Wodan has been your last project for Europa Park?
No, it was the... Well, Arthur was the first and the last because it was over 5 years.
Yeah.
So I was hired for Arthur and I left after Arthur was open. And in between, I did all these little projects. And Wodan is one of them.
Little projects.
Yeah. Wodan was one of them. Wodan was always a dream of mine. And that's, I'll tell you a funny story. So when I was a student and I worked in the park, one of my job was Epic Express driver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was driving the big monorail. I loved it. I loved it because you see the whole park. You're not only in one location, you've got a talkie-walkie, so you hear everything that's happening in the park.
Yeah.
You know everything. And you're part of it. And the scenery changes and you see a lot of things. And I walked through the park and it was helping me to see, hey, this place we could build this place we could do that. And I was joking one time with one of the supervisors, you know what? We should put a wooden coaster behind the fjord rafting and all that, you know? And maybe that was the start, early 2000s or end of the 90s of the fan forums online of this website. Say, you know what? I should do a sketch and make like a bad picture of it and I'd put it on a forum that we found out at Europa Park in an office or whatever just to see what the people would do. Funny enough, a lot of people still do that today. I know a theme park located in France that has just made fake markups from a construction site just to ignite curiosity into fans. I'm not going to tell who, but
it's easy to tease our fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you do, you know, these balloon tests where you point at the height. Oh, that's going to be a loop that is like 30 meters tall here.
Or always having somebody important walking about with a construction helmet and a hyphen and a hust.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, what's going on there?
So we wanted to do that, but I never did it about a wooden coaster, you know. And one day, 2010, I was a bit... I have a little bit of history with GCI. Because I work with Dirk Engelhardt, which is one of the salesperson for Mack Rides and for GCI also. And I got fortunate enough to be involved with some project like the Toverland Troy. At that past, I was helping Dirk, you know, to do the nice documents for selling the rights to Toverland. And I went very often with some project with AAB in Power Park, where they had the first European GCI coaster there, which I really love. And I'm in love with this product, the classical wooden coaster, yeah. But really... well-built.
Yeah.
Durable, comfortable.
But still a little bit rough because it's a wooden roller coaster.
Yeah, but you sit on a sofa.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the whole secret of that product is that you sit on a very comfortable sofa that absorbs the vibration. So yeah. It's not as painful of something as a different product. And so I always wanted to have a wooden coaster in Europa Park, but it was a little bit difficult. So one afternoon, I say, okay, you know, I'm taking a break of Arthur. And I took the layout of the Power Park coaster and I just put it in Iceland. And I remember I did a note to it. Okay, we should have 3 trains operation because we are Europa Park. We need capacity. And it's totally feasible. You just need to use your the transfer track for the maintenance bay as a additional block.
Yeah.
Then you get it, you know. And we can do 3 trains and we can do the height and the length and it's going to fit. And you know what? I wanted to go to Blue Fire and I wanted to go to Atlantica altogether. After that, and I sent that to Dirk. I said, but don't tell anyone. I'm not supposed to work on that. They pay me to do others. And Dirk, like 1 hour later, I get a phone call from Michael Mack and he said me, what you do tonight? I say, man, nothing. Yeah, let's meet. I want to talk about your wooden coaster project. I say, in good or in bad? I say, oh, that's awesome. That's a great idea. You know? And then we got involved. We got to involve GCI directly. And a couple of weeks later, they presented us a layout. We tried different locations in the park. Bigger version, smaller version. There was even a dueling version.
Oh.
At the place where Voltron is now.
Yeah.
But it ended up in Iceland exactly the way I drew it the first time. So, yeah. And really happy that went through. Everyone in the family loved the idea. And that was a great way. We knew we were preparing Arthur. And Arthur was a long development because it's a prototype from MacRides.
Yeah.
And the wooden coaster was a great way to put like a big attraction, but still cost efficient. It's not expensive, a wood coaster, for the 2012 season. It was amazing. It was really amazing. The emotional part of it was that we had the test run, the first test run that we could go sit in the coaster and try it by ourselves, was on the March 7, 2012. Which was the birthday of Franz Mack that unfortunately passed away 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
But that was, I think, a very symbolic date for us to have that test run because Franz Mack has also a long time of history of wooden coaster and switching to the metal coaster with the Mack family and the Mack company. So it was great.
It's again, a circle that closes. It's like a story being told again at this point. It's quite emotional, yeah.
Yeah, and this is what's nice at Europa Park is that you really have that tradition, the family tradition, and is alive. And to bring that, and the guests feel it. That makes the product differentiation, you know.
Yeah.
It's sometimes it's nice to have a beautiful master plan park with big avenues for big parade and all that. But I think, you know, to have like a wonky parade that meanders through winding roads in the park, that makes the charm, you know.
Yeah, it's always good not to be perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you have your rough edges and you have your moods and stuff. But I think it's depends on how authentic you can be.
Yeah. Yeah. You need a soul in the park.
Yes, exactly.
And people feel it.
Yes.
People really feel it.
That was what I was discussing today with somebody else. The authenticity, I think, is what makes us now more important for this industry than before, especially now with the pandemic behind us. We saw that people were really craving for for leisure activities. They needed to, of course, they were stuck in their homes for weeks. Of course, they want to go out. But nowadays, you feel that the behavior of our guests has slightly changed, but in a good way, that they really want to have this moment of, okay, put my phone away, just let everything loose and just have a good time. And that is only achieved by being authentic, being a good host, and like your experiences, having those moments which creates also emotional.
That's the future, to put the cell phone away. Because I remember, like, 10, 15 years ago, there was, oh, let's do an app, let's do a Bluetooth game so people are entertained with their phone in the queue line and all of this. And then I think Disney completely went over the top with this virtual queue line and all that. And from the day they say that, I was texting Miro and tell, they're just shooting themselves in the foot. And the people, and then the thing is that when you as a professional think of that, because you have a professional eye on it. But then when you see the average guest thinks the same, you say, okay, I still have faith in humanity.
There's still change possible. Change is still possible. It's good that you brought that up, because that's something that is really hard discussed, especially with Miro. I know that he's a really difficult when we talk about virtual queuing and stuff, but this whole thing about having your phone in your hand and book all your rides on the date, that annoys me when I think about Disney Orlando.
You go to a theme park to have a day away from your everyday life.
Yeah.
And this day at Disney ends up to be a day filled with appointments.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the point?
Yeah.
What's the point?
It's a fun day of planned activities all day. So, at 12 o'clock, you have fun on this ride, and 1 p.m. you have fun
absolutely.
On this ride.
So it's been like a couple of years I'm boycotting Disney. The only Disney parks I visit are in Asia.
Yeah.
Even with the cost of the travel, it's cost effective, still
Disney
believe me.
Disney Sea is still one of the best theme parks in
absolutely.
The world.
They still have like paper fast pass.
Yeah, so old school nowadays.
There is even a button behind it. Not talk about this.
But it's, I think also, that's also why I'm avoiding Orlando, because I hear all the stories, I see the videos and reviews from the parks, and there are so many Disney adults, they cheering for every single stupid change they do, but I think that's everything is just fixing stuff they messed up on some point with small strategic decisions they have done wrong. Gone wrong, and now they're trying to fix stuff. But I think that especially when Epic Universe is now opening next year, it's going to be interesting.
That's going to be an interesting thing. It's following these big American parks is always interesting. Budget doesn't matter for them, so I don't see a lot of creativity, basically, because if you have the money, you can do anything.
It's boring, isn't it?
It's
better to have a challenge than, you know, like, shut up and take my money.
Absolutely. And it's been like 5 years. We know every detail about Epic, but like every press release, people are, oh, that's awesome. Well, nothing new, you know?
We knew that already. And when we talk about challenges and having like a small budget, a small footprint, there are so many theme parks having in my mind right now. They are doing incredible stuff like Fantasia Land, which is... has been always critical in my mind, but when I see what route they have gone from this, you know, like mixed up thing of a thing they have been always, but now it's a world-class theme park. Or when we go even smaller, like Paulton's Park in the UK, which I've visited this year for the very first time, and my mind blown what they are doing. Or Drayton Manor, which I have been visiting a couple of times when I was working at Orton Towers. And it was I always had a great time, but I always thought something is wrong with the park. There's the small thing that's missing. And they have done in the past years the Viking Land, new attractions, a little bit of theming. They have more atmosphere. And now they have the newest roller coaster, Gold Rush. And you are involved in this as well.
Yes, I was involved with Gold Rush. So one note, I think the future of industry, because people are being fed up with the big parks, are the small regional parks. They have everything to win from that.
Absolutely.
Is it in Europe? We know them already. all these players, Nick Lolland, Le Pal, Drayton Manor, Paulton Sport.
Le Pal, just building a water roller coaster by Magnus.
Flown this morning, that also announced like a new launch water coaster, which is an amazing product in my opinion.
Whoops. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think they will kick us out, but no. I think we can take our time.
I don't. Can I just drop this in the?
Sure.
Because anyway, you can do it tomorrow. You know?
So yeah, talking about small theme parks, and we talk about Drayton Manor and Gold Rush.
Do I restart from the small parks have something to win?
No. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, okay. That's fine.
So first, to make a point, all these small regional parks have really a competitive advantage versus the big ones, big players. First, not everyone can afford the price of going to a Disney Universal.
Yeah.
And in Europe, we are a really rare place. We have really nice little regional theme parks. Nigloland in France, Le Pal, Paulton's Park, Drayton Manor in the UK, Trips Drill, Plone that just announced like a launch water coaster, which
crazy.
Is an amazing development from that product. I really love it. So that's the future of the film entertainment. And I think when you can pay like 30, 40 euros now for regional theme park where you're really going to have a good time, when you're not going to overspend for the car park, where you're not going to overspend for the food and beverage, that's really, people going to really like it, you know?
Yeah.
And so for Drayton Manor, I was involved on Gold Rush. The idea behind that ride, the park wanted a family roller coaster, but every time they were asking manufacturer, the manufacturer was pushing the newest product, the newest development.
Yeah.
And they didn't talk with the end client in mind or what is fit for the park. So we discussed with the management of Drayton Manor, and they told me that we want a family roller coaster. We have the budget of 7 million for everything, including theming. And we know from our talks with the manufacturer that we can afford 600 meters of track. And this is the location we have. And the problem is that every manufacturer that did a proposal on that land cut the trees, which you are not allowed to touch in the UK, and flattened the land, which without knowing it has a 6 meter slope on it.
Yeah.
And so basically in order to compare apples with apples, so they asked me to do a layout for a family roller coaster. And they wanted to go a section that goes forwards, backwards. So you need a spike for that. And the land is beautiful. The trees are beautiful. You're not allowed to cut them. So I don't have much room for doing my track. And putting a spike somewhere would be a waste of track.
Yeah.
So that's how I got that just very simple idea. Let's use the lift as a spike. We just have to put a switch below it.
Yeah.
And then the catch is to be able to do the under chassis of the train symmetrical, to be able to go forwards and backwards on the lift that you use as the spike. But then it was, wait, now if you can go the main track backwards or the main track forwards, or you launch this way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how the multidirectional came to life. A very world-class, unique product.
It is
because of a constraint. I love constraints. That's your biggest source of inspiration for
Just look to Fantasialand. Their main source is constraints.
I love that project.
But,
you know.
But when I first saw the layout, and it was funny because Drayton Manor was really keeping it secret so long. No teaser, no trailer. They just build it on some point and said, well, something is coming, but you know, we don't tell you anything. And when I was this year there, I saw the construction site. There were no testing right now, and I think a month or two later they opened the roller coaster, and I was just mind boggled of which way. So there's a switch track, but there's also a switch track, so you go up, down. When I saw the very first on ride, I was like, okay, that's what they had in mind. So just utilize the track as much as possible and go in either ways. But what I heard is that there's also like a switched program, so they can go another layout in the evening?
Yeah, so this is what they do now because the rewritability is a factor. I love the average consumer, a visitor of Drayton Manor, completely directly sees the innovation and sees the fun in it.
Yeah.
So it really triggers the rewritability of the product. The problem is that people, you have to queue, it's like 30 minutes, 45 minutes to queue for a ride like this. And then you get again the same program you had before. And then you get again the same product, you know, because it was totally random. You don't know. Nah. And so they decided to go, okay, morning program A, afternoon program B, which gives the opportunity for everyone to experience both, you know.
Yeah.
But the fun would be really to have this randomness to it. Yeah. But let's see, maybe this is the new ride, you know. Maybe this season, next season is going to run like that. And after that, it's going to be random because the novelty effect is going to be passed. So,
yeah, anyways, and when you think about daily operations, you need to think about, okay, what's easier to communicate to our guests and just get the feedback in the first sight. So you need to have a schedule for when it's open and you will amend it anyway. Because your first idea, as we talked about before, your very first idea is not that what is the final product at the end. But when you think about all your journeys, you have been with Europa Park many times. You've done with Atelier du Bouton some stuff, Drayton Manor Gold Rush. What was your biggest learning in all your projects you had?
That's a tough question.
I know.
I asked you to send me the question before.
That's not how this format works.
My biggest learn?
Your biggest aha, wow moment. Maybe there was a situation where you think, oh, I've never thought about this that way. So when we do it that way, we can do this and that. Or you, a thing, a situation, a moment where you still think about today, that's really formed my work, formed my character maybe as well.
I think it's really the passion for innovation and optimizing the products. But when I say the products, the rides and whatever we create, you know, it's to how to make it more fun, how to plus it.
Yeah.
And that's what really I love to do, you know, how to reinvent the mine train like we did with Gold Rush, how to reinvent the panoramic pedal car by doing it suspended with Volo Da Vinci. How to create a new type of story coaster like we did with Arthur, you know. I take great pride when I see that big names like Universal used it for the Jurassic Park in Beijing. That was, I went last year there in the park and I rode it. And they didn't hang it from the ceiling, so big mistakes. But they could have.
Point taken.
Yeah. But they didn't put a lot of theming to it. But with the onboard audio in the middle of the ride, they start the Jurassic theme from John Williams. Then I got my little tear coming out of my eyes. So I was super proud of myself.
Job well done.
I said they will never credit me for that ride. But if I wouldn't have created it for Europa Park, they would never have it.
Yeah. And when you think about your career, is there any advice you would give young professionals? Because you started as a fan as well, so you
don't be scared to talk to people.
That's great.
Don't be scared to talk to people. It's very. This morning I was in the breakfast at my hotel here in Amsterdam, and I saw someone with a EAPA badge, you know, and I asked him, and he was from France, you know, and I'm a student in mechanical engineering. I say, okay, so you want to work at B&M or Mac or Intamin? Or he said, yes. Okay, so go talk to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And don't be scared. People will welcome you. You know, it's the invaluable advices I got from the Mac family when I was a teenager, you know, up to today. It's just like, it's nice. And be active in the way, show what you can. Don't be a passive one, you know. Yeah. I see too many young people that they love the industry, but they end up working as a bank in a bank or in a supermarket or different jobs, you know. And follow your passion, you know. If you're really good at it, you'll succeed.
Yeah.
You have, and think outside the box and don't be scared to voice yourself. Don't be scared to bring innovative ideas. Don't be scared, you know. There's, everything is evolving. Humanity is evolving for thousands of years and be part of it.
Anything else I would say now would destroy this last sentence. But
Don't be scared. Speak.
There we are again. But that's a good advice, and I think I believe that our listeners will hear the background noise. We are sitting at the IAPA Expo in Amsterdam right now. And it is the place where you can speak and talk to people, get involved, show your ideas, get feedback, and just, yeah, don't be scared. Talk to your people. Talk to if you see somebody who is you recognize as a young professional. See,
absolutely.
Like, oh, there's somebody I know. I really want to talk to him. Go and say hi.
So there's a great program which is called the Next Gen, but you talked already on the podcast with Laura Marakovic last year. I really love that episode.
Oh, I really love Laura. She's such a great person.
Yeah, I made an appointment with her and I met her earlier today. I want to be a mentor next year. Because I think it's... I love to give back to our community, and I love to give back to young people. I had interns in the past at Europa Park that still work for me today.
Awesome. Yeah. That's great.
And I really like the way they think, the way they challenge me. And I'm not bossy and I listen. And I'm really proud. The earlier they can fly on their own wings, the earlier I'm free to retire. So great.
That's a good way to think. Frederik, thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for sharing your passion. And I hope that our listeners will take the advice. They aren't scared anymore. And if by any chance... they want to contact you, how is that possible?
LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Send me a message just now. Don't send an invite without a message. Take the time.
And the link to your LinkedIn profile will also be in the show notes. So just hop by and we'll have a look. Frederik, thank you so much.
And thank you. And really do the trip next year to Barcelona for the IAPA in September. It's really worth it.
It is. Yeah. It is lots of walking at the show floor. So get your good shoes and some comfy clothing.
Yeah.
My feet are hurting today. It's just the end of day two, and I'm just done.
But everyone is there, and go to talk to the people, but have something to show.
Yeah.
You never got a second chance to make a first impression.
Another one. It's just,
well, this is famous. That's not for me.
But still good. Didn't I say that that Frederik is a enjoyable human being? It was such an amazing interview and exchange of ideas and opinions. And what is really funny to me is afterwards we really spoke really, really long time, and the next day we bumped into each other again, and we had so many things to share, and he pulled out his phone and showed me some concepts he did and some stuff we were talking about in this interview, like this conveyor belt system for the station, for the Artur and the Minimoys roller coaster at Europa Park. And it was such an amazing thing to see how passionate he is. And I hope this passion and this fire, this spark flew into your ears, into your brain, and you are hooked for this industry as I am. And if you are still curious, how can I find more about Frederik? There will be a link in the show notes. And if you are still curious, who is this guy talking to you? My name, by the way, was Stefan Burian, or still is. And if you are curious about my services with my amusement business support, just have a look into the show notes. I have to say thank you very much for listening. I wish you a fantastic time and hear you next time.